GM of the Detroit Red Wings. Ken Holland joins us once again. Ken, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Good. Nice to be with you.
Ken, I do want to discuss, and I know this is a junior trade, but you've done it many times when you bring in a player at the deadline or a month before the deadline, you know, just trying to strengthen your team to go on a long playoff run. And, you know, some years you have great success with it and others you don't. Can you ever pinpoint, you know, why some guys find chemistry better on teams than others do when they come in?
Boy, that's a good question. I mean, I think if I knew the answer, sometimes you might not do it or you might do it differently. But I think that, you know, as a general manager, whether you're in junior or whether you're in pro, if you think that your team's in a position to go on a playoff run and there's a player out there that you really believe is going to upgrade your team or give or make your team deeper, you know, you're and the price is right, you really feel you should do it. You want to give your group the best chance they can to go on a long playoff run. And like you've said, sometimes the problem sometimes it doesn't work is because if you don't win the cup, the perception is it doesn't work. And I don't know that's always the case. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes if it helps you go an extra round deeper than maybe you normally would have got, it worked. But I don't think that's a perception at times from the media. But, you know, it's just you hit the word chemistry. You got to find chemistry in a short order because from the trade deadline on, you've usually got about 15 to 20 games, and then you're into playoff hockey. So you have short time for the players to find chemistry.
Ken, your team this year sitting pretty comfortably right now in fifth place in the Eastern Conference. I was looking up your shootout numbers. That's really a big reason why you're maybe not tied for first place. You guys are 1-7 in the shootout. You know, you can't score, and you've given up a lot of goals. And last year, Jimmy Howard was great in the shootout. Like, I don't know, as a GM, or how infuriating is it? Because it's really not anything other than maybe a few practices and drills in practice you can do to try to make your team better in the shootout.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt we'd love to be 4-4 and have in 3 extra points on the board, but you know, that's the system, and we haven't got the job done in the shootout. I just think that you know, I think a lot of it probably in the shootout is confidence, and once you know, we used to be really good in the shootout here 3-4 years ago, and you know, Jimmy Howard's been really good in the shootout. He hasn't been as good this year as he's been in the past. It's sort of its own little 5-minute competition that's really gigantic in the whole grand scheme of things because it's a huge point. So certainly we expect to be in some shootouts between now and the end of the year, and we've got to figure it out because they're huge points. We were playing real well and kind of going along pretty well till about the middle of December, and we've been playing about 500 hockey the last 11-12 games. A lot of those losses have been, like you said, in shootouts and extra time. So I know Mike Babcock has done some things differently in overtime and shootouts at home. We let the road team shoot first, which normally the home team shoots first. We've played 3 forwards. Sometimes he's used 4 forwards in overtime to find a way to get an overtime win. But they're huge points. We're going to continue to kind of grind away at it, and we know we've got to find ways to get points in extra time because it's going to be a photo finish at the end of the year to be in or to host the first round instead of being on the road. So critical points, and we've got to get it figured out.
General Manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Holland, joins us. I know Edmonton's done that same philosophy on shootouts recently, too, is to allow the other team to go first, and it's kind of been, I think, 50%. So I don't know if in the shootouts, really, Ken, I don't know if you just sit back and try not to get too nervous about it. I know it's very impactful on the overall standings. In New Jersey last year missed the playoffs because they couldn't score in the shootout, but it's different maybe than when you watch your team make a mistake in a game because a lot of times it's, you know what? It's not necessarily a major mistake being made. It's either a really nice move or just a good save.
Yeah, I certainly think there's a different feeling probably when you lose in a shootout versus when you lose in regulation or in overtime. You know, you know, the game ends and then you've obviously got shootout competition going on and you know, so I kind of look if you lose at a shootout. You know, in assessing our team, in assessing where our team fits, and how we've played. I really assess it over the 65 minutes. I think that the, you know, the come playoff time, if you're able to qualify for the playoffs, there are no shootouts. Certainly, there are four. There can be four on fours in overtime if you both, you know, you take matching minors or something. But you know, again, it's they're big points, and we got it in last year, and one of the teams we beat out by a few points was New Jersey, and had they have had a better shootout record, they might have been in and we would have been out. So we're certainly aware of it here in Detroit, and we know that we've got to have a better record than 1-7 when the year is over.
Ken, there has been some talk about 4-on-4 and 3-on-3. Would you be in favor of that for 7 minutes and then go to the shootout rather than the current format?
Well, I guess I've been one of the pushes at the general manager level over the last 3 or 4 years to try to find ways to have more games decided in overtime and less games in shootout. And it really goes back to 05 when two teams voted against the shootout, Chicago and Detroit. So we've never been a fan of the shootout. We did have a great shootout record for a number of years there when it was first in place. And, you know, we had, you know, we've gone to the switching ends, certainly the American League going from 5 minutes to 7 minutes and the last few minutes going to 3-on-3. It appears it's been pretty successful. I'm sure we're going to discuss that at the managers meetings in March. I'm all now, certainly there's a union involved and they'd have to sign off on it. So, you know, certainly there's a lot of different, you know, Gary Bettman in the National Hockey League. You know, so I think at the first step is for the managers to discuss it, and if we like it and support it, then see if Gary likes it, and if the union is on board, and if not, we'll continue to stay with the formula we've got. But I'd certainly like to see a higher percentage of games decided in regulation and overtime. Then I think last year we were at 40% were decided in overtime, and I think we're maybe a 50% or a touch over. So certainly would like to see a higher number if possible.
Ken, you have had a very high number of success from players developing in Grand Rapids. Todd Nelson talked about how tonight he's like, man, I've coached against a lot of these guys because he's been the head coach in OKC for the last few years when you faced off against Grand Rapids, and you've continually had success. Now, I know you told me that if you had the top two or three picks, that in some cases that might be different, but overall, your developmental plan, even with losing a lot of your veteran players, still doesn't seem to have changed. How do you remain so patient as an organization?
Well, I think number one is I playing in the American League for 9 years, from 1975 to 1984, in two organizations that were struggling at that time, Detroit and Hartford Whalers, really impacted my thought if I ever got an opportunity to develop players. Spending time with Scotty Bowman, who liked veteran players from the mid-90s when I was in Detroit till he retired in 2002. And then I would also say, you know, we've had good teams. You know, we've had playoff teams. We don't pick high. We don't get top 10 picks. So it's hard for those players that we've drafted to be in the second round and to leave junior and to take the veteran's job. So I just think that a big part of it's been my philosophy and respect for the National Hockey League and how hard it is. You know, if you're a scorer in junior, and we've got a good young scorer in Anthony Mantha that's now playing in the American Hockey League, got 80 goals in 80 games last year in the Quebec Junior League. There's people that make a living in trying to stop you from scoring. That's how they eat. That's how they make a living. Their job is to if you can score, their job is to shut you down, take your space away, frustrate you. And I think that, you know, when you leave junior or college and you're young and you're 18, 19, 20 years old and you turn pro, you don't realize how good, how big, how strong, how hard the National Hockey League is. And unless you're really talented and you can make that step from junior college right to the NHL without going through the American Hockey League, those are fabulous young players. Most people need to kind of learn and get experience at either checking, experience at scoring. So I'm just a big fan of time in the American League. And again, our team has been good enough that there hasn't been that real pressure from within or outside to really push people along. So I'm going to try to continue to be as patient as I can with our young players, because I really believe the American Hockey League is the best development league in the world.
Ken Holland, general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, joins us. They take on the Edmonton Oilers tonight at Rexall Place. Ken, you've dealt with a lot of potential free agents over the years. Maybe never as one as, you know, in the situation with your head coach, Mike Babcock. I know you guys have agreed you're likely not going to discuss it mutually until the season's over. But how does this differ from maybe if you had one of your star players on the verge of unrestricted free agency?
I don't think things are any different. I just think that what's changed now is social media. It's just the world that we live in, and how everything is so instant, and how there's so many more, seems to be so much more media, and with all these different platforms, everybody gets to weigh in, which generates more talk and more talk. So, you know, in 09, we went into the last 09, we had pending unrestricted free agents in Marian Hossa, Franson, and Zetterberg. We ended up signing two. Hossa went to Chicago. I kind of look at, unrestricted free agents, whether you're on the ice and off the ice. We got we got exclusive rights until June the 30th, and you hope people want to be in your program. You hope that they like what's going on. You hope that we've got an environment where people enjoy going to work. And again, our program isn't for everybody. You know, some people have left through free agency. Sergei Fedorov left, Martin Lapointe left, Marian Hossa left, and many others have stayed here and spent all of their career, most of their career in Detroit. So yeah, I think my take is you try to create an environment and a workplace that is positive and people make decisions that they want to be part of that.
One player I want to ask you about, Steven Weiss, who last year, due to injuries and many other things, you know, it was almost a write-off season for him, Ken. He was started this season again injured, and he's come back and, you know, has 12 points in 16 games. Just talk about maybe the reemergence of Weiss, and is he starting to become the player you were hoping to get when you signed him?
Well, when we signed him, he had a tough year before during the work stoppage. I think he played 13 games out of 48, but certainly he was 29 years of age. We tried to re-sign Filppula when Filppula hit the open market. Weiss was one of the players we had targeted, and we signed him to be our second line center. We went into camp last year, and our second line really was going to be Daniel Alfredson, Franson, and Weiss. I think there was an adjustment to playing for Mike Babcock and the type of hockey and the expectations that Mike has got. And, being on a team with Datsyuk and Zetterberg, his role had changed. I think he was trying to figure out his role. And as he was figuring out his role, he got off to a probably a bit of a slow start. And then his groin acted up. And by early December, he had surgery. He was supposed to come back in February, and the surgery, he had a lot of issues. He basically missed the entire year. Well, while he went down, guys like Luke Glendening really grabbed hold of the fourth line center spot. Riley Sheehan grabbed hold of one of the center spots. And as we come into this year with a healthy Helm and a healthy Datsyuk and a healthy Zetterberg, things have changed in Detroit since we signed him. So he's now a winger, and he paid. He kind of waited patiently early in the year for an opportunity, and then was really productive for a stretch. And I think Mike got him on the fourth line and playing with Glendening and Miller, and playing on our second power play. So as we go along here, we think he's going to be an important part to our team. Certainly, his role is a little different right now in the fourth line, but we've had good specialty teams, good power play. He's been a big part of it, and as we get some injuries, he's going to get more ice time and a bigger role. And you know, you wait. Sometimes in sports, you got to wait for your opportunity. And right now, what happened last year has created opportunity for other people. They've grabbed it. They haven't let go, and he's got to kind of wait his opportunity for more ice and maybe get back in the middle. But I think that We like our depth with if you got a guy like Steven Weiss in the fourth line, certainly you feel that you can get offense up and down your lineup. And if we have some injuries, certainly he's a guy that can play in the top nine or top six. He's done it his entire career.
And I got two more quick ones for you, Ken. I really appreciate your time. One, based on your history, you know, we're nearing now the final 2 months before the trade deadline. Do you feel the price for players gets higher as you go closer to the deadline, or does it depend on the return giving up to the other team that maybe you can make a deal in January that you feel can help your team get a higher playoff standing rather than just 17 or 18 games?
Well, I just think that the price is going to always be relatively high because, especially in a parity league now, so many teams are in the hunt as you get to the deadline. And, you know, there's not a lot of teams that are looking to move players. So if you've got more buyers, it all depends if there's more buyers or more sellers. And I just think that the standings and the parity and the competitive balance add up to more buyers than sellers. So and certainly if you're a team out there and you've got a player that you think can really help a team that wants to go for a long run, you know, you're looking for a good price. We paid last year at the deadline Kelly Yarncrock, who's playing in on the fourth line in 23 years of age in Nashville in a second round draft pick. I think we paid a pretty stiff price to get David Legwand, but you know, we looked at our organization, and with Sheehan and Nyquist and Tatar and Mantha and Teemu Pulkkinen and Abdelkader and Helm, we just felt that we wanted a veteran in there that could give us a chance to compete for a playoff berth. And Legwand, Franson, and Nyquist for about 15 games after the trade really carried our team, and I don't think we would have made the playoffs without doing the deal for David Legwand. So. You know, when there's a player available, there's going to be someone that's going to pay a good price because there's just not enough players that are available come deadline time because of the standings.
And lastly, you and Mike Babcock have worked together for such a long time. How is your relationship, Ken? Do you just supply him with the players, or do you talk? And you know, how often do you guys talk about ice time for certain young players in the organization, or do you give him the players and then just let him coach him however he likes?
I would say to you that our relationship is, when it comes to general managering decisions, I get his opinion along with our pro scouts and then sit with Mike and talk. And then ultimately, I've got to make the final decision. And I think it's the opposite when it comes to during this season. You know, we play tonight in Edmonton. You know, Mike asked me yesterday my thoughts on line combinations and on any changes. I gave him my opinion. I know he asked Jim Hiller, the assistant coach. He asked Tony Granato, and ultimately he has to make the final decision because he's the coach. So I think the biggest thing is communication. I need his input when I'm looking to do something because he's behind the bench. Sometimes some of the players I bring up, he's got a good feel for. They might be in the you know, when we were in the West, Western players, we knew a little bit better. You know, sometimes he'll say to me, I don't know that player well enough. What do the scouts think? And, you know, we'll look at stats and some of these things. But I think the biggest thing is we have good communication. I make the final decision on the things the general manager should make the decision, and he makes the final decision on the things that the head coach should make it on. And he supports me, and I support him, and I think we've got a great relationship. There are times when we're in the back room and we're battling away because maybe we've got a difference of opinion, but we've got to sort it out for the good of the team and to make the right decision. But I've had a fabulous 10 years with him, and my wife just had a birthday party. He and his wife came to the party. We, you know, we're friends. We're friends away from the rink. His wife, my wife, our family. So, you know, I'm big on chemistry and relationships, and I've got a good relationship with Babs.
Well, definitely a good relationship. You guys have had a lot of success together. As always, Ken, we really appreciate your time. Continued success.
Thank you.